Welcome to Friday's edition of A Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Today's story, many stories we'll have, including a book on A Wolf Called Romeo with Nick Jans. Also going to be hearing from Lindsay Hurlburt, and she'll be here to highlight Saturday's Fall Harvest Festival at the Auk Bay School. Pianist Barney McClure is going to be here to talk about tonight's cabaret. And we'll also be hearing about a fun thing, Monday's Alaska Day Pancake Breakfast at the Juno Senior Center. That's all happening, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, more, all right here on KTOO News. Thanks for joining me. First, a special edition of National Native News coming from the Alaska Federation of Natives Conference.
Reporting from the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton. At its convention last year, AFN endorsed Dan Sullivan's opponent in a tense campaign. Congressman Sullivan Thursday addressed the audience as their junior U.S. Senator. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Sullivan focused his speech on one of his political strengths, military issues, specifically veterans.
We have in this room, we have a room full of heroes. We have a state full of heroes. We have a country full of heroes.
It was right in line with the convention theme, Heroes in Our Homeland. Sullivan mentioned that he's a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Reserves and just finished 5 days of reserve duty. But he used much of his speech to highlight the military service of Alaska Natives.
Let me say that again. Think about that. Alaska Natives serve at higher rates than any other ethnic group in our military in the United States. That's World War... Yeah, that deserves another round of applause, doesn't it?
He named a few Native leaders who are vets: Bill Thomas, Emil Nadi, Oliver Levitt, Walter Sobolov, both junior and senior. Some, Sullivan said, came home to racial discrimination and lack of opportunity.
No matter how poorly you were treated by your government, when you were called to serve, you did it. That is a special kind of patriotism.
Sullivan says he wants to reestablish National Guard units in rural Alaska, a goal he shares with Governor Bill Walker, but the senator warns it will be a long, tough fight. He drew applause when he spoke of a bill he sponsored to allow Native vets of the Vietnam era apply for 160-acre allotments. The Alaska delegation to Congress has argued for years that many vets missed the deadline for applying in 1971 because they were serving their country. Sullivan told the convention he testified for the bill at a Senate hearing.
But what's a little bit disturbing to me is the Obama administration is opposed to my bill, saying that it's not equitable, that it's not fair.
The administration also objects because the bill would allow claims on national forests and wildlife refuges. With help from Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin in Washington.
Fairbanks 4 supporters protested during Governor Bill Walker's address to the crowds at opening day of AFN. The protests began about a third of the way through Governor Bill Walker's address to the crowd, just as the governor addressed the Fairbanks 4 issue.
Please don't hold back any of your passion or frustration with me as a result of that. You're entitled to that. Because of what you have done, your passion, they are in trial today. They are getting their day in court today. So keep that up. I fully understand that.
KNBA journalist Jocelyn Estes described the scene as she hosted a live broadcast of the event.
A proclamation recently.
So a crowd of people at the one side of the room are holding up a sign that says Justice Fairbanks 4, and they're holding their hands up in the air.
As protests go, it was polite. Protesters occasionally shouted, "Free the four," but mostly stood holding four fingers up to represent the four men at the center of the murder case that's being reexamined by the courts right now. After the governor's talk, the AFN board and delegates came to the stage and asked the audience to stand together, raising four fingers for the Fairbanks Four. As protesters erupted, AFN co-chair Anna Hoffman from Bethel requested that the governor deliver justice on the issue.
On behalf of the board of directors and all of the delegation here, we have a very important message for you. Free the Fairbanks Four.
The delegates to the convention are on their feet, raising their hand.
No more four. No more four.
The Alaska Federation of Natives Convention runs through Saturday. Reporting from AFN, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The AFN newscast produced by Aquatic Broadcast Corporation and Native Voice One. Major funding provided by South Central Foundation, ConocoPhillips, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, Donnellan Gold, the Rasmussen Foundation, Shalista Corporation, the Siri Foundation, and Manaluk Association. Take the online listener survey found at knba.org. This is a production of KNBA Aquatic Broadcast Corporation and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to the KTO studios here for Juneau Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. I'm joined by Nick Jans. Nick, thanks so much for coming in.
You bet.
Appreciate it. Nick has a new book out called A Wolf Called Romeo, and also you'll be making a presentation at the evening at Egan. That's happening tonight, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of hard to believe. Actually, the book's been out for 14 or almost going on 15 months now.
Okay, wow, yeah.
Yeah, it's doing pretty well.
That's cool.
It's very humbling and gratifying experience to see it take off a little bit. I mean, outside of Alaska too, just because Romeo's story is kind of something very, very near and dear to Juneau and to me. It's a very personal story.
So let's cover some of the facts around Romeo. He was a wolf that was in the Mendenhall Lake area. For what, about 5 years or so? Was kind of
six years.
Okay,
six, really. He just, you know, out of the blue, a wolf showed up one day in 2003, and you know, it was uncertain exactly where he'd come from, but a female wolf, a pregnant female, had been killed by a taxi about 2 miles from our house. Several months before, and there certainly had been some wolves trapped up in Nugget Basin, and he may have been the only survivor from a pack, or he may have been a dispersing young wolf, because wolves split up and go off on their own when they reach a certain age, just like we hope our own kids do.
That's right.
and go make their fortune in the world, and he just ended up washing up on our shores. And the remarkable part about the whole experience wasn't that a wolf showed up. It's that we got to know him over such a span of time and over again. And he got to know us as well, and our dogs, of course. Not one person, dozens of people, and to varying degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were several people like Harry Robinson and John Hyde who both had a definite strong personal relationship with the wolf. And I would say I did too, you know, although again, no one can say what's going on in the wolf's head to what degree or whatever, but many Junoites had their own stories and their own little relationship with this wolf. And it was something that really defined this community's character. And it was a marker in its history. And it still is. You look around Juneau and there are two streets named after the wolf. There's a coffee named after the wolf. There was a beer named after the wolf. And let me say, it's a town where people value their coffee and beer.
Right.
You know, and there's a bronze memorial plaque. You know, he really has become part of our legacy. You know, if you think of Patsy Ann, you know, the
sure.
mutt that used to greet the ships, you know, maybe she was Juno's mascot a long time ago. But if you ask me what animal defines modern Juneau, Alaska, it's Romeo the Wolf, and it's this quintessential Alaska story, and it could only have happened here. I really think it was just one of those events, and an ongoing event, you know, over a period of years. There's no other place I can think of in Alaska, or really in the world, where a wild wolf could show up and could live on the edge of us. He wasn't just out at the glacier. He showed up here and there, all over the valley and out the road, and hopscotched through yards. And I think he ended up down as far as Thane sometimes. And he got around as wolves do.
Yeah.
And certainly his headquarters was out near the glacier.
Well, tell me a little bit about what prompted you to actually start chronicling it and then writing it and take on this project of writing a book.
Well, I've always written about personal experience. I came to Alaska to hang around the wild, you know, wild animals, wild places, and writing was just something that naturally came. It wasn't what I came to Alaska to do, to become a writer. I started writing to explain things to myself, and then I thought maybe it was something that other people might want to lean in and listen to, and it happened not without a lot of effort, but a pretty fluid manner. And so, of course, writing about the wolf in small ways, writing essays for Alaska Magazine, was totally natural. But I thought the idea of writing a book about Romeo's story after the 6 years of his life and death, I thought it was impossible. I thought it was an impossible task because it didn't have the standard arc of a Shakespearean play, you know, where it's, you know, you have introduction, rising action, and then a falling action. The whole story was contained in his very first appearance. My God, there's a wolf. And oh my God, he's dead. And that repeated endlessly over and over and over again. Of course, there were times of wonder and everything, but it just didn't have, it had this odd little circular structure that I thought couldn't be turned into a book. And I actually thought about fictionalizing it. I was going to try and write a movie script, a fictional movie script with fictional characters.
Mm.
Dave Hunsaker, for one, of course, is very active in screenwriting. He said, look, you're a writer. Write a book. If it's going to be a film, it'll be a film. And I thought, I can't do this. And my wife, Sherry, wouldn't let me go on the idea and said, you have to write this. And I took a deep breath and said, sure, and found it was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life, and it took me 3 years to write. It was extremely difficult to make it go, just to technically build a story out of this odd structure mm-hmm. and make it go, and then I realized all the balls that I wanted to keep up in the air. There was the story of Romeo from a personal level. There was the story of Romeo from the levels of other people and from a community level. There were management issues that rise straight out of this. What do you do with mm-hmm. a wild wolf living sure. on the edge of people? You know, what does the Forest Service do? What does Fish and Game do? Not to mention this affable, sociable wolf shows up right at the one of the high water marks of the state's predator control program and is a poster child for the exact opposite wolf that we're being told is a good idea to get rid of. And I'm not saying that he was a typical wolf. He was anything but that. He was a completely non-typical wolf. And yet, at the same time, an emissary from his species. You know, it really felt like surreal and out-of-body
yeah.
experience. The whole time, it never stopped, and it still feels like that. And if I didn't take the damn pictures, I'd still say, I made it up. I must have dreamed it.
It does seem. I mean, I had encounters with
yeah.
Romeo,
out
on the lake in the winter, and have the exact same feeling as well, a surreal
yeah.
feeling, a feeling like you're really reaching out to the other side.
Yeah,
you know?
and the thing is that really he came to us. That was the interesting thing about it, and he was a damn smart wolf, and he was very interactive. You could see how man's worst fear turned into man's best friend. Right there on that spot. Like he was the prototypical wolf that came to lie down by our fire. And that's what a lot of the story is about. You know, that's, you know, is the intersection between dogs and wolves and issues of dog behavior. When you see a dog fetch, you know, is he acting like a wolf or is he acting like a dog? You know, the fact that a dog bonds to us, is that something a wolf will do? Or is that non-typical,
right.
et cetera, yeah. et cetera, et cetera, yeah. all these interesting ideas.
Well, without further ado, let's just hear a little bit from your book. This is from your book that, as you said, was published, 18 months ago? Give or take, you know.
Came out in July of 2014. I lose time, you know.
And then you're doing a presentation on it at Evening at Egan tonight, and that's going to be kind of a multimedia sort of presentation.
It features a slideshow.
Okay.
That's 90% of it is this slideshow, is getting to see pictures of the wolf interacting with people, with dogs, with his landscape.
And then you of course, as you said, took 3 years to write this book, A Wolf Called Romeo, and maybe if just read an excerpt from it, it'd be great to hear from you.
Okay. Well, this is from the prologue. So this is where the book starts. "Are you sure about this?" my wife, Sherry, breathed. She glanced over her shoulder toward the comforting glow of our house on the lake shore, then gazed ahead, where a black wolf stood on the ice in the gathering twilight. Bundled against the southeast Alaska cold, we'd taken along just one of our three dogs, our female yellow lab, Dakota, who'd always been perfectly mannered and under voice control around wildlife, from bears to porcupines. Despite some understandable jitters, Sherry was so thrilled she was about to jump out of her skin. After all these years of trying and not seeing, there it was, her first wolf. Perfect, I thought, and easier than it ever should be. But as we walked farther out into the ice, things changed. The wolf, instead of watching from the tree line as he had several times with me, angled toward us at a trot. Then he broke into a lope, snow flying beneath his paws, jaws agape. I drew Sherry toward me and reached for Dakota's collar. Vision sharpened, synapses crackled. I'd seen my share of wolves over the years, some point blank close, and hadn't quite shifted into panic mode. But anyone who claims he wouldn't get an adrenaline jolt from a running wolf coming straight in, no weapon, no place to run, and loved ones to defend, is either brain dead or lying. In a few heartbeats, the wolf had closed the distance to 40 yards. He stood stiff-legged, tail raised above his back, unblinking stare fixed on us, a dominant posture, less than reassuring. Then, with a moaning whimper, Dakota wrenched free of the two fingers I'd hooked through her collar and bounded straight at the wolf. A tone of desperation sharpening her voice, Sherry called again and again, but there was no stopping that dog. The lab skidded to a stop several body lengths short of contact and stood tall, her own tail straight out, and as we watched, mouths open, the wolf lowered his to match. With the two so close, I had my first clear idea of just how large the wolf really was. He towered over her, more than double her weight, just his head and neck matched the size of her torso. 120 pounds, I figured. Maybe more. The wolf stepped stiff-legged toward Dakota, and she answered. If she heard our calls, she gave no sign. She was locked on and intent, but utterly silent, not at all her normal happy lab self. She seemed half-hypnotized. She and the wolf regarded each other as if each were glimpsing an almost forgotten face and trying to remember. This was one of those moments when time seems to hold its breath. I lifted my camera and snapped off a single frame. And that frame that I took is the cover of the book. That's the very shot.
That's really amazing. Thanks so much for reading that.
Well,
I had my mic off here. I was sitting here listening.
Well, you know,
that first encounter, I remember it too. It's
sure.
Boy, man.
Yeah, we all, so many of us had that.
And that bigness and that the length, the leg length. I remember thinking so much about wow, you would never mistake that for a dog.
Oh yeah,
you know,
right. And yet some people did.
Yeah.
What was really interesting is that. You realize that there's obviously total hobbits living among us, because like 5 years later, someone would look, I'd be out there skiing and keeping an eye on the wolf out there on the lake, and there'd be a big crowd of people, and someone would like point over there and say excitedly, "Is that a wolf?"
Right. Like, yeah.
And I'd say, yes, where have you been?
Well, Nick Jantz, thanks so much, and thanks for that reading. That was really wonderful. That's from your book, A Wolf Called Romeo, and then you're doing a presentation tonight at Evening at Egan that's going to be featuring, of course, that picture that you talk about there, that first picture.
Yeah, and many others.
Yeah.
You know, there's quite a few. Most of them 3/4 of the images are ones I took myself, and a few of them were contributed by others. And also there's some pretty amazing video footage that starts off the whole thing with really the best recording of Romeo's howls I've ever heard.
Oh, that's really cool.
Made by Vic Walker, who's a local veterinarian, who also had his own little relationship, and he and I became friends over that wolf.
Wow. Well, great. Nick, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate
Thank you very
it.
Much,
Have a great
Andy.
The evening at Egan starts tonight at what?
7 o'clock.
Okay.
In the library, yeah.
Out there in the library.
Seven.
Yeah, yeah.
Sunday. No, it's not Sunday.
No,
Friday. Friday.
Thanks, Nick.
Okay,
appreciate
thanks
it.
So
okay.
much.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Lindsay Hulbert's with me. Lindsay, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me,
Great
Andy.
Great to see you here. And
yeah.
You're, of course, with the Auk Bay Co-op, and you guys are doing, next Saturday, you're doing the Fall Harvest Festival. Well, tell me all about it. It's going to be happening at the Auk Bay School, right?
Yes. Yeah, so we are Auk Bay Co-op Preschool, and we are having the festival at Auk Bay Elementary School.
So this is the, okay.
Just to clarify
just
that, to start.
Just to make it more confusing.
yes, absolutely. So every year we do a Harvest Festival fundraiser. In the past, it used to be just for families, but we've opened it up in the last 2 years for the whole community. So we'll do that again this year, and it will be next Saturday from 3 to 6. And we have some bounce houses. We've got pumpkin bowling. We have a trick-or-treat lane. The kids get to come in and make their own treat bags, and then they get to collect things throughout the night. We have all sorts of candy, and we also have non-candy types of treats. And we have gluten-free treats. We have nut-free treats, and we also have prizes that are good for kids who just can't do the candy.
Pumpkin bowling. I want to know about this.
Yeah.
What's going on with that?
Well, so you set up like regular bowling, but instead of using a bowling ball, you use a pumpkin.
A full-size kind of...
Not for little kids,
Oh,
no.
It's little kids
yeah.
doing it, of
little
course.
Little kids,
so
yes,
little
yes.
gourd...
Just a little small pumpkin.
Kind of little pumpkins.
Yeah.
And they smash all over the place, right?
Yeah, sometimes they do. That's half the fun.
Kind of sounds
fun.
We
like to get messy. Now, the goal is that they don't smash, but that, you know, you have to plan for those things.
Sometimes to get that 7-10 split,
yeah.
man, you need to, you know, you need to use up that
it,
pumpkin. Yeah.
Chuck it down the lane. Yes.
Right spin.
So that happens. So, and then we'll also have a bake sale as part of our fundraiser where some of our families from the preschool will be creating their own dishes to bring. And then also for sale, we will have some cotton candy, popcorn,
cool.
juices, waters, that sort of thing, because after eating all that candy, you will get thirsty.
Well, so. Tell me a little bit about the co-op preschool, the idea of having it be a co-op.
Yeah.
And this it's kind of a nonprofit. It raises funds and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually started as a nonprofit in 1999. 1967. It was a group of parents that got together, wanted to be involved in their kids' education. So they put together this school, and they had teachers in there working with the parents every day. And then as it grew, they actually split. So now there are two co-op preschools in Juneau. There is the Juneau one downtown and the Ok Bay Co-op Preschool, which is in Chapel by the Lake. So every day we have two teachers and we have two work parents who hang out and help facilitate. So we have a cap of 20 kids, and it's all play-based. Both preschools are that way. And so the kids are really learning through all the things that they naturally love to do. And that makes things just so much easier for them, because once they're engaged, they're much more obliged to actually learn more about those sorts of things. So,
so that's interesting to think about. I never really quite thought about preschools and stuff as you know, like, okay, it's where you dump your kids so you go to work.
Yeah.
Hey, I did it. You know?
Right. Yeah, and that,
but
you know,
it's
that
awesome
works
to think about how that is really, you obviously, now that I say it out loud, it sounds dumb, because obviously you guys have education goals.
We do.
You have different techniques for what you're trying to do with the kids.
Right. So, they're, you know, just all those little things that kids love to do when they're playing in the dirt, they're really learning a lot of things. They're not only, to, you know, control of their bodies, which is a big thing, fine motor and gross motor control, but, you know, you mix dirt with water and you start to get into some of that chemistry. You can get into the biology of what's living in the dirt. You see how it changes throughout the seasons.
Baking, mud pies.
Absolutely.
Yep,
that,
so you figure that out.
I eat so many of those every day. The kids make those a lot. I have put on some weight. And then, you know, just the other emotional side of things. When you throw dirt in your friend's eyes, they cry. And when, you know, you try to make them feel better, sometimes they don't feel better because you just can't get over that hump. So, you know, it's a way for kids to learn through the things they naturally want to do. And it just, it really works naturally. And that's something that I really totally and completely believe in. And it's a philosophy that, as far as I'm concerned, could be applied throughout all the schools. But that's a long-term goal.
I mean, it makes so much sense that we learn best the things that we're have the most fun and have the most excitement about.
Right. Yeah. I think most adults know that, you know, if you have to take a class that you're not interested in, you're probably not as engaged. If it's something you want to do, if you've chosen that, or if it's something you're interested in, then it comes a lot more naturally. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the Harvest Festival, what are the hours and all that?
Yeah. So it's Saturday, October 24th from 3 to 6 p.m. And it is at Ok Bay Elementary School. So that'll be just there at the regular school. And if people are interested in our preschool, we're located in Chapel by the Lake. And we do still have some openings for our pre-kindergarten class, which is our 4- and 5-year-old class that meets on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So.
Okay, awesome. It's the Ok Bay Co-op, and it's the Saturday Fall Harvest Festival. It's happening out at the Ok Bay School, but it's for the Ok Bay Co-op, and it's all happening not this Saturday, but next Saturday is when it's all happening. Lindsay, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks,
Andy. We appreciate it. Great talking to you.
You bye.
Okay, here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 16th of October, 2015. It's the birthday of Noah Webster, Hartford, Connecticut, 1758, set out to write an American dictionary when he was 43. He wanted Americans to have their own language that wasn't based on the language of England. And also, the dictionary was to help Americans communicate with each other because regional dialects differed so drastically. It was Noah Webster who took the letter U out of English words like color and honor, and he spelled theater and center, E-R, rather than R-E, and introduced American words like squash, wigwam, opossum, presidential, Congress. It's the birthday of Oscar Wilde, born Dublin, 1854, who said all bad poetry springs from genuine feeling. And Eugene O'Neill, born in New York City, 1888. His father was an actor who played the lead in The Count of Monte Cristo more than 6,000 times. O'Neill accompanied him on the road. Eugene O'Neill said, "As a boy, I saw so much of the old ranting, artificial, romantic stage stuff that I always had a sort of contempt for the theater, And then in 1907, when he was 18, he saw Ibsen's Hedda Gabler in New York. And he said, "I discovered an entire new world of the drama, a modern theater where truth might live." Here's a poem for today by Barbara Crooker entitled Equinox. Another October, the maples have done their slick trick of turning yellow almost overnight. Summer's hazy skies are cobalt blue. My friend has come in from the west, where it's been a year of no mercy, chemotherapy, bone marrow transplant, more chemotherapy, and her hair came out in fistfuls twice, bald as a pumpkin, and then the surgeon's knife. But she's come through it all, annealed by fire, calm, settled in her bones like the morning mist in valleys and low places, and her hair's returned, glossy as a horse chestnut kept in a shirt pocket. Today, a red fox ran down through the corn stubble. He vanished like smoke. I want to praise things that cannot last. The scarlet and orange leaves are already gone, blown down by a cold rain, crushed and trampled. They rise again in leaf meal and wood smoke. The great blue heron's returned to the pond, settles in the reeds like a steady flame. Geese cut a wedge out of the sky, drag the gray days behind them like a skein of old wool. I want to praise everything brief and finite. Overhead, the Pleiades fall into place. Orion rises. Great horned owls muffle the night with their calls. Night falls swiftly, tucking us in her black velvet robe, the stitches showing through. All those little lights, our little lives, rising and falling. Equinox, a poem by Barbara Crooker from her Selected Poems, published by Future Cycle Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices. Subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by TIAA Cref, a global financial company dedicated to delivering financial outcomes that matter. TIAA Cref, created to serve, built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
McClure, that's Show Me. That's the title track to his new CD, and Barney's here in the studio with me. Barney, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also here with us is Reggie Schapp, who's the production manager for Juno Jazz and Classics. And Barney, you're going to be featured at Come to the Cabaret, happening tonight at the Jack.
That's right. Do they still call it Singing in the Rain?
No, we call it Come to the Cabaret.
Come to the Cabaret, okay, that threw me.
We were hoping it wasn't going to rain.
wishful thinking.
I don't know that I'm going to be featured. It's my gift, if you will. It's the thing that I do, especially in Juno. This is my 15th one here. And but really who's featured are all the students who... The participants, that's a better word for them.
But there are students involved as well, right? People have been to a workshop.
And they learn.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and that's the whole premise, is to have a professional in so that they can learn what people are doing in the real world of vocal jazz. And it's not necessarily jazz. It's more, I'm not teaching anybody to scat sing. And cabarets over the years have really changed a lot. I mean, when I first started it many, many years ago, it was the American Songbook, basically, and the smoky old ballads, right? Now it's got country western, it's going to have hip. I've done reggae. You know, it's got a little bit of everything.
Hmm.
And recently, due to one of your residents here, Myron Welling, he's been submitting original material and doing it, performing his own material for the past, I'd say, six or so cabarets that I've done.
Well, how would you describe cabaret? And tell me what that means to you,
yeah,
as a definition of the show.
I could have defined it years ago as a product of the pre-World War II in occupied parts.
That's what the Liza Minnelli, Joel Gray stuff that we know of at
exactly.
You know, the 1972 movie that
sure,
was
Marlene
from,
Dietrich,
yeah, all that,
personifies
right.
that, even Edith Piaf to some extent. People who were singing music tinged with the American jazz sort of, and they...
But a European, obviously a European sort of...
Right, but it was also forbidden music.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was an underground, and it always had that enigma, you know, attached to it. So for many, many years, that's what you thought of. You wouldn't invite high school kids participate
right.
because of the language and the concepts and all that sort of thing.
Seems an
well,
adult,
that has
yeah.
evolved. It is totally different now. Cabaret sort of means sort of a cross between Broadway show material, the old jazz classics or the American Songbook, and country western, and anything that is in big part of our culture today, the rock and roll of different kinds, you know. It's everything. It's the whole thing.
So it's just more of a showcase for vocalists? Is
that's
that kind
exactly
of...
what it's boiled down
yeah,
to.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you have a certain accompanists, and then the different vocalists come in and kind of showcase what they're...
Right, and by virtue of having just a piano player, you're not getting the band... you're not going to do a record cover.
Yeah,
you
right. Know?
It's
right.
going to be however much your piano player can cover all the bases. And one of my premises is that I lay on them is that we're going to make this your tune. We're going to do this that in a way that features you. We're not going to do it the way the Beatles did or, you know,
right.
Rolling Stones or anybody else. We're going to do our own version. And that pretty much, that holds true for the most part.
Reggie, tell me a little bit about how this all comes about every year. It seems like it's a pretty big project, right? You've got these, is it a week-long workshop
it
that builds up to this?
It is a week-long workshop that builds up to it. Barney comes up, and they started on Monday. They've been practicing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on their songs, and they all got a private lesson with Barney, so they've all had group lesson as well as a private lesson. So it's a wonderful undertaking.
And how many singers is it?
21 singers this evening.
Wow.
Yeah, there's going to be 21 singers
okay.
doing 29 different songs.
We've had up to 32 singers
really?
Do this cabaret. Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's a pretty popular, especially here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, it's something people look forward to in the fall, I think. Yeah.
They
right.
certainly do.
yeah.
They certainly do.
Happening at the Jack.
It's happening at the Jack at 7:30. Tickets are still available, $20 for adults, $10 for students.
Preparations underway over there right now.
Preparations are actually mostly done, we hope.
Okay.
There will be a no-host bar and a bake sale going on as well. And we have collected T-shirts over the past 30 years of Juno Jazz and Classics, and we're going to be selling them tonight. And so if you're that favorite T-shirt you like that you can't find anymore, we might have it tonight. I can't guarantee we have every single one in every size. And they're going to be great Christmas gifts because they're $5 for short sleeves, $10 for long sleeves, and $20 for a hoodie.
All right.
Can I give you an outsider's perspective of Juno Jazz and Classics? I've performed at it a couple of times as a guest artist. And it's one of the most well-run and gracious jazz festivals anywhere, bar none. I mean, I've been all over the world, particularly in Europe and Japan and other countries for festivals, and all over the United States and performing in festivals. And there's just something very personal about this one that makes all of us as artists want to come back and
yeah.
love the way we've been treated. It's a great festival.
Yeah, we played a little of your latest CD here just to start it off, and that's you on the B3 organ, a little bit different than what we're going to be hearing tonight.
Everybody here knows me as a piano player.
Actually, I
was featured here at the Juno Jazz and Classics on Hammond B3 with Dee Daniels.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about the difference for you between performing as a artist, where you get to kind of just interpret your own work, do this kind of stuff, and then this kind of work, where you're working with a lot of different vocalists, you're trying to make sure that you're representing their talents. I mean,
that is exactly what I'm trying to do. My wife pointed it out to me because she sees the dichotomy. I'm a creative artist sitting at the piano in a festival or a jazz club or something like that. And then I'm a teacher, and she said that what I apparently have over and above many other jazz class players is the ability to share what it is my craft is about. I get a lot of joy out of that. I really, really do. I look forward to these sessions, and I'm never disappointed. In fact, I'm always blown away. And it's watching people cross that line, crossing those fear factor lines in the sand where they get out there and do this. It's scary stuff.
Are you a vocalist as well?
By default, I like to say that I sound somewhere between Willie Nelson and Kermit the Frog.
That's good. I like both of them.
Well, I do too.
I like both of them a lot.
They've cornered their market, though,
yes.
So I'm just a wannabe.
But I ask because you're obviously working with vocalists. Are you sort of instructing them in
good
their
point.
Vocal style, or are you just...
I am not, and I make that clear.
Okay.
I'm not a vocal coach. I can't teach them to breathe, use their abdomen. I can't improve what they've got going wrong in their throat, all these kinds of things. I can tell them about it, and I can tell them how they sound, but there's one thing I am good at, and that is stylizing. I know the various kinds of styles, and that includes other genres, like country western, for example. I've probably done hundreds of country western albums just because they want someone who can improvise, right? So they go to the jazz guy. I know what their rules are and what their protocol is. And so I can help people stylize better. And if they want to be a jazz singer, certainly I'm comfortable there. So I think my real gift is, if I have a gift at this, it's motivating and coming to them with a wealth of experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tell people I know 40,000 tunes. Of course, the only one I don't know is the one they're going to ask for. But
is there something that people sort of like a common thing people stumble into that they...
Yes.
What's that?
I try to steer clear of them, and we have one of them tonight. One of the tunes is Summertime. That's always a go-to tune.
Right.
But wait till you hear this young lady sing it. I was stunned.
Uh-huh.
My Funny Valentine is another one. Moon Dance and Fever. Those four songs are the go-to.
Are the go-tos, right. Well, they're all pretty good standards.
Sure,
they're all... But at some point, we've had enough of, let's go to, there's thousands of other great songs.
I want to tell you, though, Juno never disappoints. People do their research before I get here. They come up with tunes I've never heard of, and concepts. I mean, I'm challenged all the time.
Are there some things that are really kind of a little bit out there for what's happening tonight?
Sure.
Maybe a little preview of things to watch for? Or?
Sure. Well, watch for every one of them. Everybody.
Sure. Yeah.
I can't put one over another. There's one person doing a tune called Creep, and she can't even use the words it was recorded with.
That's a Radiohead song. I know that song. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's good. That's going to be it. Actually, that one, you hooked me on that one. I like that. Okay. I like to hear about it. Okay. Well, Reggie, any other details or maybe just to go over the details one more time if people want to attend?
It's this evening at the Jack, 7:30 start time. No host bar. We have everything set up ready to go. Just come and have a good time. If you get there, you're not going to be disappointed. I've heard them practicing this afternoon, and it was wonderful.
Sounds good. We're going to hear one more. I was going to play Slow Boat to China. Is that okay?
Sure.
Another one here.
That's an old tune that I still play because I love it. It just kind of cooks.
This is you on once again on the B3 organ. You'll be heard on the piano tonight as part of Come to the Cabaret for Juno Jazz and Classics. I love the idea about selling the old shirts. That's going to be really fun. And Reggie Schapp, production manager from Juno Jazz and Classics, thanks so much for coming in. And pianist Barney McClure, thank you. Great talking to you, and
nice
have a great show tonight.
Thanks.
Barney McClure, who actually poked his head in here as he left and said, oh, that's not Slow Boat to China, that's actually Spot. And that's actually going to be a perform tonight at Come to the Cabaret. So check that out. It should be really fun at the Juno Arts and Humanities Center, Juno Arts and Culture Center, right there on Eagan Drive. Well, with me now is Alan Akiyama. Alan, thanks so much for coming in. Alan is on the advisory board for the Juno Senior Center. And, Alan, there's a real fun thing happening on Monday. It's going to be an Alaska Day pancake breakfast, and there's other stuff happening that has to do with the Senior Center. And welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on your program today.
Sure. Tell me a little bit about the pancake breakfast.
Well, every Seward's Day in March and every Alaska Day in October, the Juno Senior Center Advisory Council puts on fundraiser, a pancake breakfast at the Senior Center. We've done it for so many years now that it's kind of become a tradition, so we try and do it twice a year. This year it's going to be next Monday, October 19th, at the Juno Senior Center, which is at the corner of 12th and Eagan Drive. Starts at 9 a.m., goes to 11:30 a.m., and we're going to have a good breakfast for everyone. We're going to have pancakes, scrambled eggs, bacon and our ham and our sausages. We have some fresh fruit. We'll have coffee, tea, juice. So it'll be a nice way to start your Alaska day.
And what are the hours it's going to be?
It's going to be from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m.
Okay.
And the tickets are $13 in advance. You can get them through me or through Carol Camoli with a Juno Senior Center at 463-6175. There are $15 at the door and $7 for children 10 and under.
Okay, great. Oh, it's a bargain at any price.
That's right.
Sounds like a great time. And you get to hang out there, and of course they have a nice kind of facility to a cafeteria to eat and all that sort of stuff there.
That's right. We have a commercial kitchen at the Juno Senior Center. Our regular cook, Daniel's, going to be making breakfast that day, and I'll be helping out in the kitchen as well. And all the volunteers will be taking tickets and helping out in the dining room. So everybody's volunteering their time next Monday. And it's a fundraiser for the Senior Nutritionist Program, which in Juneau does Meals on Wheels, which delivers meals 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, to shut-ins in the Juneau area. And right now we have over 100 people that get meals every day through the Meals on Wheels program. In addition, we serve a hot meal every noonday on Monday through Friday at the Juneau Senior Center. And there is a cost for that. It's $10 for people 60 and under, $5 for 60 and above. And they also serve meals, same meals, every Tuesday and Thursday at the Douglas Methodist Church.
So if people, so on Mondays, you could just go by and get a lunch at the Senior Center? And
that's right. And I drop by there often to have a good hot meal in the middle of the day.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Don't have to be a senior at all. Just come on by and have a good meal.
Say hello to the folks there who are also eating there as well.
That's right.
Yeah,
yes.
Nice. And you were saying that actually there's the ability for people to contribute to Meals on Wheels by actually being a part of the program. Is that right? You're looking for folks to help with that program?
That's right. Meals on Wheels uses volunteer drivers to deliver the meals every day. We have 8 different routes around town. And the routes are split up, so usually take between an hour and a half. And if you're interested in becoming a volunteer driver, you can contact Eileen, the Meals on Wheels coordinator, at 463-6179. And
that's always, also, you can also call that number for tickets to this upcoming pancake feed as well.
You can contact Carol Camoli, the Juneau Senior Center Manager, at 463-6175.
Okay, great.
And for the Meals on Wheels drivers, most Meals on Wheels drivers just do one route a week, so it's only about hour and a half of your time once a week. And if you are unable to have a regular time, you can also be what we call a fill-in driver. Occasionally, people are out of town or unavailable, and so sometimes we need someone to fill in for our regular delivery drivers.
So you are on the advisory board for the Juneau Senior Center. How did you get involved in that?
Well, my good friend Ward Lamb is president of the Juneau Senior Center Advisory Council, and he asked me to come down to one of their meetings. So I sat in. I thought it was an excellent cause. Although I'm not seeing it yet, I think I will be in a few years and probably will need to start using services like that. So I'm doing a little bit of pay forward.
That's right.
Trying to help them out now. And if anybody's interested in joining the advisory council, we meet the second Friday of every month at 1 p.m. at the Juneau Senior Center. We try and keep our meeting short, an hour or less. So if you're interested, you show up and sit down, see if it's something you might be interested in helping us out with.
That's great. You also were mentioning that there's a raffle happening right now.
That's right. We're having our second annual Juneau Senior Nutrition Program raffle. We had our first one last year and it was very successful. So we're doing it this year again. So look for us to be out in the shopping malls and grocery stores this fall. Started now, and we're going to have the drawing for the prizes at our monthly December meeting, which is December 11th. And we have 4 great prizes, and the first place prize is $500 cash.
So I like that.
Yes.
Just cash money.
Yeah. Second prize is a Madden Frame Dale DeArmond print. And third prize is a couple of pieces of beautiful Polish pottery. And fourth prize is an Arnie Weimer print.
Very nice. Great. So some nice artwork, or you might be able to get some cash out of the raffle. And it's a great contribution to a really good program. And that also contributes to the Meals on Wheels program.
That's correct. All of our fundraising money goes to the Senior Nutrition Program. And tickets for the raffle are $10 a piece or three for $25.
Great. And the first thing that's happening, though, is this Monday coming up. It's Alaska Day. Pancake breakfast is happening at the Junior Senior Center. And that starts at 8:30, is that right?
It starts at 9 a.m.
9 a.m. and goes to 11:30.
That's right. But you're welcome to come a little bit earlier to get online, because usually there's a line of people at 9 a.m.
Sounds great. It's $13 ahead of time if you call 463-6175. It's $15 at the door, and only $7 if you're under 10.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Alan Akiyama, thanks so much for coming in and telling us a little bit about what's going on at the Juno Senior Center. And it's great to hear all this stuff going on. It's great to hear that you can just go get a hot meal there anytime, and that's a great resource for the community.
Yeah, the Senior Nutritionist Program really is a good program for the seniors in particular, but also for younger people as well. Like I said, you don't have to be a senior to come on down and have a nice meal around lunchtime.
Yeah, and it's just great to be able to be in a room that has elders in it, and mm-hmm. where you get to interact with folks that mm-hmm. maybe you don't get to interact with every day, and it's wonderful to talk to those folks. Thanks so much, Alan. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, Andy.
Coming up next, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. We're justifiably concerned about the effect of today's changing climate on birds and other species, including our own. How will living things respond? We can learn many lessons from the Alexander Archipelago, a chain of more than 1,000 islands in southeast Alaska. Less than 10,000 years ago, these islands were covered by ice. With vast quantities of water stored in glaciers, sea levels were 100 meters lower than today, allowing many species to walk to what are now islands. As glaciers retreated and sea levels rose, populations became isolated. They developed new behaviors and evolved to become new species or subspecies, like the spruce grouse on Prince of Wales Island. Only in these islands do wolves wade in streams to catch salmon. The Alexander Archipelago shows us what to expect elsewhere on our climatically changing planet. Species will colonize places where they have previously not lived. Others will die out as their range becomes uninhabitable. There will be winners and losers. Such dynamism is, of course, nothing new. As Heraclitus said in 513 BC, all is flux. Nothing is stationary. Still, we need to remind ourselves not to expect conditions to remain as they are now. There's more to this story on birdnote.org.
Man, that's it for Juno Afternoon today. On this Friday, the forecast is calling for mostly cloudy skies and rain. Southeast winds dying down to get down to about 10 to 15 miles an hour tonight, and lows tonight around 47 degrees. Tomorrow it's going to be showers, highs around 54, looking like about the same for Sunday, highs around 52, and heading into Monday, mostly cloudy skies, no rain in the forecast on Monday, very good, with highs around 50 degrees. I'm Andy Klein, thanks so much for listening in to Juno Afternoon today. We're going to be joining with more stuff coming up here from NPR in a minute. I just lost my train of thought, Annie. Everything going all right? All right. Thanks so much for tuning in today. You are looking for, you're not gonna find her. Yeah.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K2